Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, one God, amen. So I am assuming you received an email and we're going to be talking about something related to fasting and virtues. Just to start off, we have this verse from Job who says, I put on righteousness and clothe myself with judgment like a robe. We're just going to keep this in the back of our mind as we kind of go through the presentation. I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of stuff that's not new, and it's also going to be relatively quick. So just to leave room for us to discuss things that maybe are not new, but this stuff is foundational, so we just want to make sure that we're on the same page. So just very basically, usually when I'm with you or when I'm anywhere, I like to start with the definition of terms, just to make sure that everybody's kind of on the same page. So, you know, if we were to start with the first of those two words, fasting, and we were to ask somebody who is not in the church, somebody, just a friend who's not affiliated with Christianity or anything of that sort, you ask them, what is fasting? What answers might come up? Not eating, so abstaining from food, good. Anything else? Cutting out certain habits, okay. Oh, okay. So typically when I want to just get a generic definition, we'll go to dictionary.com. And this is what comes up. To abstain from all food. And then I'm almost certain too that I looked this up before and the second definition wasn't there, but I feel like maybe because of a Coptic population or something, they added it. But to eat only sparingly or of certain kinds of food, especially as a religious observance. But in its essence, a lot of the foundation is that there's a complete abstinence, but we tend not to even do that. We tend to just, you know, modify the diet. But there's a lot to be said about the food component, like, you know, even the quality of the food or the amount of food. Like, okay, we change the diet, but we still, like, make sure that we stuff our faces to make sure that we're full. Okay, so even from the food side of things, there's a lot that could be said, but that's not really the point of what we wanted to address. So, is there anything to a Christian that would be added to this definition? Like, what is fasting to a Christian? Especially if we come to these seasons, like of Great Lent or otherwise. Yes. Sacrifice. So, why sacrifice? Like, what are we sacrificing? What's the point of it and all this? Okay, that's very good. So something like it's an act of love towards God. That's very good. Does anybody have anything else to add in terms of yes?
I kind of see it as like, you know, weakening, like, your body, like, besides that, you can pay, like, you know, your soul in the spiritual side.
Okay, so it's a dedicated season for the spiritual side of our life. We can, like, so it's related to the spiritual side. Good. Anything else? So this is essentially what I would have said too, which is essentially a dedicated season that the church prepares for us so that we could focus on our spiritual lives, on our relationship with God, essentially. Okay, so that's definition number one, fasting. Definition number two, virtue. To any person you meet randomly, what would they say a virtue is? Because these are not exclusively Christian words. They exist elsewhere too. So what is a virtue? This one's a little bit harder. So I'll give you dictionary.com's answer. It's moral excellence or goodness or righteousness. So this is what dictionary.com says. To a Christian, maybe you could ask you that. To a Christian, what would we say a virtue is? Why are we trying to obtain virtues? Or like, why? What is it that we want to obtain?
To be like Christ.
To be like Christ. Very good. Anybody have anything else to add? But can you tell me, maybe just if I could ask you back, like what is a virtue in order, like, that acquiring it makes me like Christ? Like, what can we give at least some examples of virtues? Maybe that's an easier question. the answer, so just humor me. Patience, very good. There's a virtue. Patience is a virtue, that's what they say, right? Okay, so what else? What are other virtues? Humility, very good. More. Sorry? Self-control, very good. Yes, sir. Yeah, definitely, you could say faith. Kindness, go through the fruit of the Spirit. So you get the idea, but all of these things you listed, kindness, self-control, patience, and in essence, these things are very much, what's the word I'm looking for, personified in the person of Christ. So just a very quick Bible study. Very quick. So this is in the first chapter of Genesis, okay? In the first chapter of Genesis, two verses, verses 26 and 27. Beher, can you read them?
So, I just want you to pay attention to the difference between verse 26 and verse 27.
Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them.
Thank you. So, anybody catch any difference that exists or can observe any difference that exists between verse 26 and verse 27? Okay, so there's the plurality there. Okay, you're right, that's present. What I want to know more specifically is between God's intention in verse 26 versus what actually happened in verse 27. And you know that I'm asking the question because there is a difference. So, sorry? You're right. So that part is out. So actually, if I can just bring your attention exclusively to the first line in 26 and the first line in 27, or the entirety of 27, but just the first part of 26 so you don't get confused by the second portion. So, you know, because we won't get too much into, because even if we say, like, if we refer to God, this doesn't necessarily exclude the Trinity, although we might mean the Father. So, you know, the plurality of the our versus the seeming singularity of the his is not really what I want to focus on. But, sorry? So what I wanted to focus mostly on is actually, if you look in the first part, it says, then God said, let us make man in our image according to our likeness. So in the verse 26, you have two parts. You have image and likeness, correct? Verse 27, and what actually happened? So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Where's the likeness? So at the beginning, he wants to make them in his image and likeness. And then when he goes and makes them, the likeness all of a sudden is not there. Okay? So it's a detail that we read over many times, but many of the church fathers commented on this very profoundly. And one of just very basically, just to share one small quotation from St. Basil, he says, by our creation we have the first, so which is the image. The image of God is what all humanity has just by virtue of their existence. The likeness is something that we, by our free choice, build. Okay, so we're made, yes, in his image and to be in his likeness, according to our likeness. But when he created them, the likeness is not there. So what the majority of the fathers will comment, some will see them as the same thing, but a lot of them will comment and say, we all by our creation have his image, and it is for us to become in his likeness. And this likeness, which was already mentioned, are the acquisition of the virtues. So when we talk about the virtues, we're in essence returning back to the creation and what God intended from the very beginning. Okay? Does anybody have any questions or comments about that? So we have fasting, which we defined as a season that the church gives us to grow spiritually. And there's no other spiritual goal than to become more like God. Okay? We could talk about fasting and prayer and all of these things, but these are all means to an end. They are not ends in themselves. Okay? The end is to become in his likeness. Okay. So, I don't know if you know this, but Isaiah 58 is like the authority kind of on fasting. We often look to the New Testament and things like that, but Isaiah 58 is very important. And actually, if you could just follow along with me as we read, what's going to happen, you're going to sense a lot of the sentiment that the people of Israel are saying in our own fasting. They're questioning God, like, we're fasting, but you're not receiving us. Why is nothing changing in our lives? Where are you and all of this stuff? So this is essentially what's happening over the next two slides. So just bear with me here. It says, why have we fasted, they say, and you have not seen? Why have we afflicted our souls, and you take no notice? In fact, in the day of our fast, you find So this is now God talking to them. In fact, in the day of your fast, you find pleasure and exploit all your laborers. Indeed, you fast for strife and debate and to strike with the fist of wickedness and will not fast, as you do this day to make your voice heard on high. So is it a fast that I have chosen, a day for a man to afflict his soul? Is it to bow down his head like a bulrush and to spread out sackcloth and ashes? Would you call this a fast, an acceptable day to the Lord? Is not the fast that I have chosen? So he just spends time condemning the way they fast, kind of sackcloth and ashes and all of this stuff. And then he starts telling them, is this not the fast that I have chosen? To loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, to let the oppressed go free, and that you break every yoke. Is it not to share your bread with the hungry, and that you bring to your house the poor who are cast out, when you see the naked and you cover him and not hide yourself from your own flesh? Then your light, so now here is the reward of the fasting. Then your light shall break forth like the morning, your healing shall spring forth speedily, and your righteousness shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. Then you shall call and the Lord will answer. You shall cry and he will say, here I am. Can you imagine having such an intimacy with God where you cry and he comes to you and answers you, here I am? So this is supposed to be the value and the perfection of the fasting, which is, again, it's an intimacy that's being built with him. It's an intimacy where I'm becoming more like him. Okay? So we cannot dissociate fasting and our relationship with God. And, you know, it seems very logical, but we just reduce it to a bunch of food questions, and it's very unfortunate. Mirai, maybe I could ask you to read this.
In other words, not only should the mouth fast, but the eyes and legs and the arms and all the other parts of the body should fast as well. Let the hands fast, remaining clean from stealing and greediness. Let the legs fast, avoiding roads which lead to sinful sights. Let the eyes fast, by not fixing themselves on beautiful faces and by not observing the beauty of others. You are not eating meat, are you? You should not eat debauchery with your eyes as well. Let your hearing also fast. The fast of hearing is not to accept bad talk against others and sly defamation.
Okay, so there's a fasting of all of the members of the body, okay? So the eyes, the legs, the hands, the ears, all of these things. Another spot in the same homily, he questions. He right away, he said, you fast from food, but you're in the process of chewing up your brother with your words. Like, what sense does it make? It doesn't. So fasting and virtues always have to be joined together. We can't separate the two. So Saint Cyril, a few other words. says,
seeing how to abstain from evil and doing good are not to the same thing. For it does not suffice for glory with God to flee evil, but to try in all ways to meet the needs and do good works and hold fast to diligence and godliness.
Which is essentially what the psalm says, depart from evil and do good. You know, it's not about not doing this and not doing that and not, and like, this is only a portion of it. But if we focus on this, the negative aspect will become very, like zahanin min from the fasting. Like, it's very like negative. And it's not the point. There's two things. There's two sides of everything. We have to flee the bad stuff and then cling to what is good. You know, like our effort, if God is over here and we're kind of in neutral territory, we spend all of our time just trying not to go back. Try to avoid hell. Try to not do what's good. That's not the point. Pursue God. Pursue godliness. Pursue holiness. Pursue the virtues. And actually all of this stuff you don't even have to worry about anymore. So we're just very unfocused when it comes to our spiritual lives and what we're trying to do. So just keep it in mind that there's the two sides, which is, yes, we have to forget the bad stuff, but we would be a lot better off if we pursue what's good, okay? Some of the monks will talk to you about how every evil has, like, or every sin has an opposing virtue. So it's very easy to find something, what you ought to be pursuing if you're trying to get over a particular sin. Does anybody have any questions or comments up until now? So, here's the question for you. Why fast? We already said, okay, we become in his likeness. Okay, but aren't we supposed to be doing that anyway? Like, what happens about the other days of the year when we're not fasting? So why fast? Why are there these periods of fasting? You're on a good track if I understand you properly, but can you just elaborate? Yeah, you're on a very good track. Is anybody, and I agree with what you have to say. I just want to see if anybody has anything to add, Mary. So then the question I would ask you is just why this particular period is dedicated, and shouldn't we be doing that all the time? Yeah, it's very good. Yes, Lynn. So you're saying that that it's a, so you're referring specifically to Holy Week?
Like as an example.
Okay.
But like I see it as a way to we're kind of trying to like how are we supposed to be present if we're not creating that faith that he did?
So it's a replication of what Christ did. Okay. So the analogy that I would like to use is just that of an athlete. So if you could picture an athlete who, this particular athlete is a sprinter and wants to win the 100 meter dash in the Olympics, okay? This athlete has to train, right? And there's specific periods that this athlete trains. So this is exactly how it is for us as Christians. And it's important for the athlete to have periods of rest as well. And it's really important for us to have periods of rest as well when it comes to times to fasting. Actually, it's this kind of dance, if you will, between the rest and the fasting that makes both of them worthwhile. The saints will say, you know, we could only really appreciate the feasts when we fast. Because then have something to look forward to. But then the feasts all of a sudden lose the meaning sometimes if we're not fasting properly. So, and it goes the other way around too. So the fasts are given meaning by the feast and the feast by the fast. So it's something, this relationship has to exist. So, and everything that was said is correct. These are periods of time given to us by the church to intensify our efforts in our spiritual life, which was something that you've repeated already a couple of times this evening, which is perfect. So it's St. John Chrysostom, he would say, you know, like the farmers, when they look forward to the period of the harvest, this is how Christians ought to be looking forward to the period of fast. This is where, like the sailors who go out into the waters, they're waiting for the winter to pass so that they can get into the waters, for the fishermen to go catch their fish. So this is the attitude that we ought to have when it comes to fasting. This is something that we look forward to. It's not something that we drag our feet like through and very begrudgingly and, you know, what can we get away with, scanning the ingredients and all this sort of thing. So the next question, to help answer the question, which is something that was already brought up earlier, and I know that you already know all of this stuff, but the question here is, what is the greatest gift that we can give God? Sorry, let me just go back 1 second. Take this away. Just about these training seasons, okay? If this athlete who's trying to train for the Olympics chooses not to train, it's purely his loss, okay? The training loses nothing. The same, there's a nice book that gives an analogy of a sailor who goes out and his goal is to try to catch the wind in his sails. If he does not catch the wind loses nothing. But it's the sailor himself who loses a chance to obtain his goal more quickly. And it's the same way with us when it comes to these periods of fasting. If you don't want to fast, between you and God and your Father of Confession, do your thing. But if you're not participating in the life that the church gave you, then likely we're not producing the lives that the church produced, which is the lives of the saints. All over. So it's something that we ought to be participating in and ought to be doing so willingly. So even if I'm not there yet, I can tell God, you know, I don't really want to train, but I'm going to try because I want more. So just keep in mind that it loses nothing if we don't participate. God doesn't need our fasting. He's not waiting for it. If we don't fast as if God loses something, it's not how it works. It's purely for our own benefit. So, back to the question. What is the greatest gift that we can give God? There's a part in the scripture that God actually asks for something. He says, give me this. Yeah, ourselves. Our entire being, okay? So the proverb that says, my son, give me your heart and let your eyes observe my ways. So he wants all of us. He doesn't, you know, we offer him the food, like, and it's definitely a good start. I'm not knocking it, but I'm just saying that he's not necessarily looking for that. He, you know, again, this athlete, if we take this analogy, if he says, I want to be the best sprinter in the world, and he goes out and buys a nice pair of sneakers, okay? It's good. It's important, it's needed, it's necessary. But if he wants to be the best athlete possible and win the Olympics, he has to give himself entirely to what he wants to do. He has to, you know, he has to cut his diet. He has to modify his relationships. He has to sleep better, watch his sleeping patterns. All of these things have to happen. Same thing happens with us when we want to give ourselves entirely. So this is partly why we fast, is because it's an offering of myself. And this offering is one of love, like, and one of joy. It's not something, again, that should be done super, super sad. I'm almost done. I just have one other slide. Two other slides. So I hope that this relationship between fasting and virtues, or fasting and the pursuit of a spiritual life, has become more clear. I just want to spend the last word about our will. Okay. The same small book, which is called The Way of the Ascetics, which I would recommend if you have not read it before. It's very small, small chapters, easy to read. Tells us something very important, which I never thought about until I had come across it here. Something to the effect that all sins come from an unchecked habit of satisfying my own will. All sins, big, small, whatever, if you want to classify them as big or small, come from an unchecked habit of wanting to satisfy my own will. So if somebody who lies, for example, so that they don't get in trouble, they want to be okay. Somebody who yells, they're just trying to get out what's inside of them so that they feel relief, not taking into consideration the person who's in front of them. Somebody who, you name it, any of the number of sexual sins, for example, pleasing the habits or the desires, name it. You know, cheating on a test so that I can do better. I want to, you know, like, I don't like to, I can't be still, I can't be silent. And I don't like it, I pull out my phone every 2 seconds. Like, I won't say that, okay, my phone is not a sin, okay. Like, the control that we are under our phones, like, that's a problem. So everything, all sin, has this in common. Even the murderer, like, you want to classify it as a big sin, he's trying to get away with something. Or he's trying to, like, cover something up. Whatever the case may be. All sin comes from this. Okay. He says in the same book, he says, since the fall, our something to the effect of our egos have been like servants to our will, or our will has been a servant to our ego since the fall. Okay. Anyway, this is really important, because actually, if I were to summarize like everything or how to pursue virtue, so if all sin comes from this, then naturally, the virtues that I'm trying to pursue are going to be going against my will. So, for example, I could say, guys, after we finish this meeting, let's go have a good bite to eat outside, and it's on me. Okay? So everybody like, yeah, let's go. Why not? You know? But your reaction and your agreeing to what I'm saying, can we rightly call that obedience? Can we say you're being obedient because you're coming with me? You kind of want to do it. It's not a. It's really cool. Why not? But if I were to say, you know, let's go downstairs, get the mops, you know, get the soap out, you know, and the church could use a good scrubbing, and things like that. So there's an element. So I'm only obedient to the point where I've been tested. And that testing involves me having to object to my own will and my own desires. So it goes like that for any virtue. Okay? So, we, you know, listening to mom and dad when they call you from downstairs, you say, just a second, and all of this sort of thing. There's, you know, maybe it's just enough for me to say that when we pursue these virtues, there is an element of having to get over myself and get over my will in order to actually obtain the virtue. I hope that's clear. Does anybody have a question or comment about that? Yeah. pretty much it done. Just a small conclusion summary. Yeah. Can you kind of ask the question, but specify what you mean by what we're asked to do?
Like, I feel like now it's all about like, it's largely about the food, and it's also about like working on your own personal virtues. But I felt like in Isaiah 58, it's saying mainly to like, it's mainly about others in Isaiah 58, like help the needy, the oppressed, like set them free, and like all this stuff. It's like, how do we reconcile the two? And like, why aren't we doing more of that now?
You find out it's more about food.
It's more about food, and it's very like personal. But I think Isaiah 58, God makes it seem like it's more of something you do for others.
I completely in agreement with you. I think it's a problem, and this is why we have to have these conversations and just kind of refresh on what fasting is. Read the scripture, because essentially, if we're not doing that, then it's very much in line with the Pharisees, right? The Pharisees fasted, but Christ did not approve of their fast. He said, actually, don't do like the Pharisees. Wash your face, anoint your head with oil, all this sort of thing. Okay? So, and if everything we were saying has to do with our spiritual life, again, the whole Bible, from cover to cover, is summarized in two words, which is essentially love God and love your neighbor, right? So, you cannot divorce the fasting from our neighbor. That's a problem. There's even, we talk about fasting, prayer, and the third one is almsgiving, right? We always talk about that. There's always, it's not absent from the teaching of the church. What's been absent, perhaps, is just the way it's been relayed to us. And also, truth be told, it's partly because of our laziness. Because it's easier for me just to say, I'm going to stay at home and pray. Or it's easier for me to say, check, fasted, prayed. Boom. So, in part, it's our laziness too. So we need both things. One is a little bit more awareness, which is why we have these conversations, and the second thing we need is a little bit more activity. Because it's not comfortable. It involves me going against my will. But baby steps. This is why we kind of need guidance when it comes to it. So I agree with you that there's a problem, and identifying that there's a problem, we kind of instinctively know what the solution is. We need to do more of that stuff, more service with others. So, you know, I don't have anything to say other than encourage you to do that and to talk about it with your spiritual guides, because this is a very important element of fasting. Yeah, I saw that video.
Did you know what you're saying?
No.
Okay.
No, but can you please like
so
try?
Fasting and other virtues.
Right.
But our church focuses a lot on fasting, right? So that we can like take care of all the sin. But how do we focus a lot more on virtues, like patience and love and faith? Like how do we like better that than anything?
Okay. So I guess it's kind of along the same lines where these virtues, because again, all of these things like patience and kindness, all of these things are towards others, right? So again, there's kind of a link to the two questions where there's this absence of the virtues, which is in effect my relationship with other people. So, and your question is, how do we focus on it? So what I'm, right?
Yeah.
So if I say something completely irrelevant, stop me. But what I'm suggesting to you is that there's not two elements, fasting and virtue. What I'm actually telling you or trying to express is that they're the same thing. And regardless of that terminology, your point is well taken that we don't focus enough on the virtue aspect of it. So how do we do it? We have to be aware of it, first of all, that it's something that we ought to be doing, otherwise we can't do it. And I think that's a problem, which is why maybe I dwelt on it a little bit longer. I recognize the same problem. We have to be pursuing virtues. This is fundamental to our Christian lives because this is what makes us in the likeness of God. Yeah, like essentially, the two go together. Love God, love your neighbor. In fact, the saints will always comment, say it's not actually two commandments, it's one. Like St. John in his epistle, you say, how can you say you love God when like you haven't seen him and your neighbor, you don't love your neighbor who you do see? Like the two are together. Like they're one commandment. So loving God and loving neighbor are, so I think this is a big problem. And I could go on a really long tangent here in terms of what it means to be a body, like being the body of Christ, being members of that body, and our activity within that body. And a living body means that it's interacting with its surroundings. So we ought to be pursuing virtue more diligently. And it's not, so how to do it? Become aware that we ought to be. Second of all, like, you know, the church would usually instruct us to pick something, get guidance about it, and then focus on it alone. We could probably think of a multitude of sins that we have and the opposing virtues that we need to obtain. This is the spiritual life. This is a life that we live. It's a process. So, slowly but surely. So, if I were to summarize again, I would say, be aware, and then pick one virtue at a time, and get guidance from a spiritual father, or mother for that matter. Yes, Mary. It should be the same thing, and therefore the two should come together instinctively. But because we have a messed up definition of fasting, then the virtue thing gets kind of thrown by the wayside. Amir, sorry, you wanted to say something.
No, I want to mention about the one body, and also answering the question about that. Even the church teaches us the same way. Like in the first Sunday, the preparation Sunday, the gospel is talking about fasting and good deeds and giving others. So it's not about it. Just sometimes we turn it to food, which is not even the way God says in Isaiah or the way church like even try to teach us. And the same of one body is like, how can I like recognize like my hand is like had a problem, and I, you know what, I will continue myself, you know, I will work with one hand, I'll be fine, which is, that means we are not living the gospel that the God wants us to live.
Are there questions or comments? So St. John, he says, do you see, dearly beloved, what true fasting really is? Let us perform this kind and not entertain the facile notion held by men that the essence of fasting lies in going without food till evening. This is not the end in view. So before anybody jumps, like he doesn't say it's wrong. He says it's not the end in view. It's not the end, it's the means. Okay? So he says this is not the end in view. But what we should demonstrate along with abstinence from food is abstinence also from whatever is harmful and should give close attention to spiritual duties. The person fasting ought to be reserved, peaceful, meek, humble, indifferent to the esteem of his world, of this world. Okay? So he summarizes it very clearly. Again, this is the church, this is what the church is teaching us. So the teachings of the church are always clear. It's just our awareness of what the church is teaching and consequently how we carry it out is what's messed up. So if I were just to leave you with three things, is that as a summary, is that fasting is an offering of myself to God. It's to be beautiful for our beloved bridegroom. I liked very much the way one friend he put it for me. He said that, you know, we're making our, by acquiring these virtues, we're making ourselves beautiful for the one we love. You know, like if you have a guy and a girl, and the husband and wife are going out together, you're going to dress up for each other and for the occasion. We want very much to be beautiful for the one we love. So that's all it is. That's essentially what it comes down to when we talk about acquiring the virtues. So we're trying to dress up our spirits with these beautiful ornaments and decorations and makeup and so on and all these things, which are the virtues. And lastly, which I alluded to already, we need to participate in this sacrament of repentance and confession, because that's essentially this movement from the good to the or the evil to the good, and we need to do so with guidance. Okay. Does anybody have any questions or comments?
If you can say no to your stomach or from your tongue, you can say no to any sin, which is very.
I really sincerely think that like the biggest problem that we've had over recent years is just a lack of an awareness of what our goal as Christians actually is. Because this is foundational. So we need to be aware ourselves and then teach, because most of us are probably going to be or are currently teachers and Sunday school servants. We need to teach properly to our kids what our goal is. I've presented it here before, and I will keep doing it because I keep seeing it, which is essentially there's these phases which I've kind of seen over the years where I can ask somebody, and I have many people ask, what is our goal as a Christian? And I can try to give you the nutshell version, but basically people will, like, from worst to best answer would be to be good. And this actually shocked me one time. There was a servant who came one time and he said, our goal is not to be good. What? Our goal is not to be good? What do you mean? So like, what's our goal? So I was like really confused. He never actually gave an answer. But I later found out like what our goal is. So actually that's because there's good people outside of the church. So what is it about goodness that is Christian? Why bother being Christian? So again, there's something missing with this answer of being good. The other thing that people will answer, and they'll say, is to go to heaven. Whoa, Andrew, you're saying like going to heaven is not a good goal? Well, not really, actually. Because why? Because like Pope Shenouda would say, if God is not in heaven, then I don't want to go there. So what does that mean? It puts into perspective what our goal actually is. Not heaven, but God. So someone would, a different friend would tell me, you know, like sometimes we feel like we have to climb over God in order to get into heaven. Yeah, that's really messed up. So again, heaven, it's a good thing, and goodness is a good thing too, but only if we understand it in the context of God. I want to go to heaven because God is there. I want to be good because goodness, the true goodness, comes from God. There's even another level, good, heaven, and then people would say, I want to be in a relationship with God. Our goal is to be in a relationship with God. Andrew, you're telling me being in a relationship with God is bad? No, it's very good. But it's not complete. Why? Because I have a relationship with the people I see on a weekly basis in my clinic. It's not a very good relationship. I try to help them as far as I'm able, and they leave, and sometimes I never see them again. But that, like, what's relationship mean? To what extent can I have a relationship with God? So there's the different levels. There's like a friendship, there's, you know, acquaintance. But the most intimate relationship we know as humanity is that of a man and a woman. Why? Because they can unite. And this is the image that God gives us throughout the scriptures, and we read it at every ceremony, Christ and the church, man and woman. Okay? So we are meant to unite with God. It's not a small thing. These details matter in terms of, if I understand that, then I could talk about goodness, I could talk about heaven, I could talk about a relationship. But if I don't understand what our true goal is, then we're off. Sorry, it's a very long-winded answer. But the point is, we need to know what our goal is and then teach that to others. So then when I go and talk about things like virtue, it actually makes sense. Whereas otherwise it just seems like I could talk about becoming more humble. I could talk about being more merciful. But if it loses its context of being linked to making me more like God, then essentially it's just a humanism. You have merciful people and charitable people who are not part of the church. The only thing that the church has going for her is our relationship with God, and more specifically, our ability to unite with Him. Sorry. So we need to learn what we're doing, because I feel like when we don't know what we're doing, then we're completely lost and we end up with crazy definitions of fasting and everything else. Share with you just a last quote by Pope Shenouda. He said, "Let God be your goal and proceed towards Him step by step. You definitely cannot start your spiritual life being perfect, and you cannot start by having God become everything to you. However, start by knowing and loving God and grow in this knowledge and love." So you're not going to start your spiritual life by God being everything to you, and don't pretend like that's the case. Because in reality, He might not mean that much to me. But I can tell Him with all sincerity, "God, I want you to mean something to me." So work with that and then let's grow.